The guide details how to stall the Trump agenda by disrupting congressional offices, realizing that a day a Trump-supporting member of Congress spends thinking about indivisible is a day that they're not ending Medicare, privatizing public schools, or preparing a Muslim registry. Indivisible activists seek to sap the will of representatives to support reactionary change by making Trump-supporting members of Congress ask repeatedly, "How am I going to explain this to the angry constituents who keep showing up at my events and demanding answers?" The guide describes their alternative positive progressive agenda as promoting climate change awareness, economic justice, health care for all, racial equality, gender and sexual equality, and peace and human rights. To promote these goals, the Indivisible Guide recommends the following disruptive tactics. Getting local news media to report that protesters barraged Trump-supporting Congresswoman Sarah with questions about the infrastructure, or that angry constituents strongly objected to Congressman Bob's support for privatizing Medicare. As for recruits, the Indivisible Guide suggests that progressive activists target those most directly threatened by the Trump agenda, including immigrants, people of color, LGBT people, the poor and working class, and women. If you are forming a group, we urge you to make a conscious effort to pursue diversity and solidarity at every stage in the process, the Indivisible Guide advises. Progressive activists are encouraged to use the Indivisible name in forming local groups, such as the Springfield Indivisible Against Hate. But progressive activists are equally free to pick their own group names, as long as the name includes the geographical area of the group, so it's clear that you're rooted in the community. The Indivisible Guide admonishes progressive activists to agree in advance on a simple message as the focus for disrupting a particular town hall meeting or local community photo opportunity with a Trump-supporting politician. Coordinate with each other to chant this message during any public remarks your member of Congress makes, the guide advises. This can be difficult and a bit uncomfortable, but it sends a powerful message to your member of Congress that they won't be able to get press for other concerns until they address your concerns. Whether the indivisible disruption involves a town hall meeting, a visit to the member of Congress's district office, or a barrage of coordinated phone calls designed to tie up phone lines in the district office, the Indivisible Guide reminds progressive activists that the optics of events are all important. Sit-ins, for instance, can backfire, the Indivisible Guide insists, admonishing that you are working best when you are protesting an issue that affects you and or members of your group, e.g. seniors and caregivers on Medicare cuts, or Muslims and allies protesting a Muslim registry. The concluding paragraphs appear aimed at an assumed generation of maturing politically correct millennials. We wrote this guide because we believe that the coming years will see an unprecedented movement of Americans rising up across the country to protect our values, our neighbors, and ourselves. Our goal is to provide practical understanding of how your members of Congress, MOCs, think, and how you can demonstrate to them the depth and power of the opposition to Donald Trump and to Republican congressional overreach. This is not a panacea, and it is not intended to stand alone. We strongly urge you to marry the strategy in this guide with a broader commitment to creating a more just society, building local power, and addressing systemic injustice and racism. Finally, this guide is intended as a work in progress, one that we hope to continue updating as the resistance to the Trump agenda takes shape. While Indivisible disavows being funded by George Soros directly, Matthew Vadim, Senior Vice President at the Capital Research Center, has discovered that at least three of the group's principals have worked for Soros-funded organizations. The impression Indivisible wanted to convey was that town halls and local meetings with GOP members of Congress during congressional recesses that were disrupted by attendees angry over President Trump's plan to repeal and replace Obamacare involved spontaneous outbursts of concern expressed by ordinary citizens. However, on February 21, 2017, Trump tweeted the obvious. "The so-called angry crowds in home districts of some Republicans are actually, in numerous cases, planned out by liberal activists, SAD. The truth is that these disruptive tactics were not genuine expressions of voter grassroots politics, but highly organized events that included coordination with Obama activists at his Organizing for Action, OFA organization, the successor to Organizing for America, a group that Obama created for his 2008 presidential campaign. The mainstream media presentation of disruptive town hall meetings was designed to convince the public the hashtag Never Trump movement was large and growing. But just like the anti-Trump hecklers and street thugs trying to disrupt or prevent Trump rallies during the presidential campaign, or Antifa street thugs seeking to prevent GOP loyalists from attending Trump's inaugural ball, the indivisible protest events are carefully orchestrated and staged. Protesters trying to disrupt town hall meetings run by Trump-supporting GOP members of Congress have included dedicated hard-left activists recruited from left-leaning organizations as diverse as Black Lives Matter, George Soros-funded MoveOn.org, union workers recruited from the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, and Planned Parenthood supporters. Chapter 10. Antifa Anarchists Go Wild. Everywhere, a Battlefield. Title of a Red Guards Austin blog post, August 2017. Police across the United States are being forced to deal with a new hard-left, communist-derived movement organized under the code word Antifa, which is short for anti-fascist. On June 12, 2017, the New Jersey Department of Homeland Security, DHS, and Preparedness officially declared Antifa to be a terrorist group, explaining the following. Anti-fascist groups, or Antifa, are a subset of the anarchist movement and focus on issues involving racism, sexism, and anti-Semitism, as well as other perceived injuries. The New Jersey DHS stressed that the Antifa movement is opposed to fascism, racism, and law enforcement, while targeting in particular far-right extremists, including perceived white supremacists. On September 1, 2017, Politico disclosed that previously unreported documents revealed that the U.S. DHS designated the activities of Antifa as domestic terrorist violence, a conclusion reached in a previously undisclosed April 2016 DHS-FBI joint intelligence assessment. The assessment concluded that Antifa, anarchist extremists, were the primary instigators of violence at public rallies against a wide range of targets, including police, government, and political institutions, along with symbols of the capitalist system, racism, social injustice, and fascism. Despite this designation as a domestic terrorist group, the mainstream media has continued to champion the Antifa movement as if the group were a freedom-fighting organization. The partisan mainstream media portrays Antifa as if the group were standing on moral high ground, in justifiable opposition to reactionary white supremacist groups seen as espousing a combination of racist, nationalist, and populist sentiments on the extreme far right. The violent, confrontational nature of Antifa anarchists presents a challenge to U.S. law enforcement that is unprecedented. The hard-left violent extremists leading the Antifa movement reject the free speech principles on which American civil discourse depends. The ultimate goal of the Antifa extremists is to achieve the demise of the U.S. Constitution by creating anarchy in the streets. Antifa in Austin, Texas. Everywhere a battlefield. The Antifa movement is a self-described Marxist-Leninist-Maoist collective that bears a strong resemblance to the Red Guards, a youthful student-based paramilitary social movement organized by Chairman Mao Zedong in Communist China's Cultural Revolution of 1966-67. In an attempt to reinvigorate China's Communist Revolution of 1945 through 1949, thousands of Chinese youth clad in military fatigues roamed the streets of major cities during China's Cultural Revolution. These Red Guard activists closed universities, destroyed churches, burned libraries, tore down statues and historical monuments, and ransacked private homes in an attempt to destroy the four olds, old ideas, old customs, old habits, and old culture. In what became a civil war between the generations in China, somewhere between 500,000 and 2 million people lost their lives in a cultural revolution that Chinese radicals hoped would lead the planet into communism. The Red Guards Austin, an Antifa group gaining prominence in the Texas Antifa movement, openly advocates for violent revolution against capitalism. The group proclaims in a blog entitled Everywhere a Battlefield that weapons training is needed for a war that is here and now, entering a phase of revolutionary violence. Red Guard Texas mixes a fluid, slogan-driven communist ideology to identify President Trump as a white supremacist by charging that Trump embraces Nazi fascist politics. The Antifa movement has found a perfect formula to justify street thugs being dressed in black gear from head to toe, with bandanas that hide their identities. Dressed as terrorists, Antifa anarchists engage in the type of street violence that leftist revolutionaries have identified with toppling governments since the days of Lenin and the Russian Revolution of 1917. At a fundraising event on September 7, 2016, Hillary Clinton was recorded on video making one of the most defining statements of the presidential campaign. You know, to just be grossly generalistic, you could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables, right? She said to what the New York Times reported was a combination of applause and laughter. She continued, the racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it. And unfortunately, there are people like that, and he has lifted them up. With this pronouncement, Hillary Clinton made clear that the Marxist analysis of class conflict in the United States had moved from a 1930s focus, championing the working people of the labor union movement, to focusing on the oppressed as defined by leftist identity politics. The new victims were no longer working class poor, but women and people of color. The oppressor stayed the same, namely the imperialistic, capitalistic, colonialist, warmongering state, as epitomized by white males exercising their white privilege. Antifa has embraced this Marxist shift, targeting Donald Trump as the fascist hater-in-chief, leading a reactionary army consisting of Hillary Clinton's basket of deplorables. Again, put simply, the Antifa revolutionaries assumed the politically correct moral high ground in their opposition to the racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, and Islamophobic voters supporting Trump. The Antifa movement shares much with both the anti-globalization protests against the World Trade Organization in Seattle, Washington in November 1999, and the Occupy movement that staged sit-in protests in Zuccotti Park in New York City's Wall Street Financial District in September 2011. But since the election of Donald Trump as president, the Antifa movement in America has assumed the position as the radical left's paramilitary arm of the hashtag resistance, hashtag obstruct movement, determined to oust President Trump from the White House. Fascist, go home. As noted earlier, on Inauguration Day, January 20th, 2017, Antifa thugs, mostly dressed in black from head to toe and wearing masks or bandanas hiding their faces, launched violent street protests in Washington, D.C., in an attempt to shut down Donald Trump's swearing-in ceremony and prevent the Trump faithful from attending inaugural balls. In what was branded as a Disrupt J20 protest, some 1,000 Antifa thugs broke windows at Starbucks, McDonald's, and Bank of America, as well as in commercial buildings in downtown Washington. Antifa rioters flooded streets, blocked traffic, burned trash, and broke windshields of passing cars. The continuous flow of confrontational, in-your-face insults made even more threatening because they consisted of angry, vulgar, and personally degrading language, continued into the night, with Antifa activists harassing Trump supporters trying to make their way to the D.C. Convention Center to attend the evening's main inaugural ball. Washington police, armed with batons and wearing protective helmets and riot gear, responded en masse, determined to clear the streets of protesters by using tear gas and pepper spray. Still, lasting until the early morning hours, a violent rampage started 2 blocks from the White House and spread to McPherson Square and K Street. A stretch limousine was set on fire at K and 13th Streets after protesters threw a flare through its shattered windows. 6 police officers were injured, and some 230 rioters were arrested after the violent protests broke out that afternoon and continued through the evening. Rioters sought to bring traffic throughout the city to a halt and attempted to close all entrances to the D.C. Convention Hall. As an indication of the seriousness of the violence, protesters who were arrested were charged with felonious rioting, an offense that carries a maximum penalty 10 years in prison, plus $25,000 in fines. Next, Antifa claims success in Berkeley, California. When protesters prevented conservative activist Milo Yiannopoulos from speaking on February 2, 2017. 2 months later, in April 2017, Antifa groups staged a violent protest in Portland, Oregon, that caused the city to cancel the annual Rose Festival in which the Multnomah County Republican Party planned to participate, a move that granted Antifa another victory. Then on August 15th to 17th, 2017, in Charleston, South Carolina, Antifa members counter-protested at a Unite the Right rally seeking to preserve a Civil War statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Antifa violence returned to Berkeley in August 2017. Apparently ignorant or unconcerned with the history of the leftist free speech movement in Berkeley, California in the 1960s, a group of black-clad Antifa anarchists wearing masks disrupted a free speech event organized in Berkeley's Martin Luther King Jr. Civic Center Park by the Oregon-based Patriot Prayer, a group the mainstream media portrayed as a right-wing organization that has organized other events that have attracted white supremacists and ended up in violent confrontations among demonstrators on both sides. The small group of conservative free speech protesters were outnumbered by a larger crowd of some 2,000 Antifa counter-protesters, determined to rally against hate by denying racist right-wing white supremacists supporting Trump the opportunity to hold a small, peaceful event. A pepper spray-wielding Trump supporter was smacked to the ground with homemade shields, the Washington Post reported. Another was attacked by 5 black-clad Antifa members, each windmilling kicks and punches into a man desperately trying to protect himself. A conservative leader retreated for safety behind a line of riot police as marchers chucked water bottles, shot off pepper spray, and screamed, "Fascist, go home." Undercover videos made by James O'Keefe's Project Veritas during the D.C. Inaugural Day Antifa protests made clear that the Antifa protesters are not university students, as was the case in the 1960s protests at universities against the Vietnam War, but professional agitators willing to engage in criminal activity to disrupt Trump supporters and create chaos. The Antifa movement, as it has taken shape in the United States, practices a type of street violence that draws from Saul Alinsky's radical community organizing ideas. Alinsky taught leftists to rub raw social and radical class tensions in order to delegitimize the U.S. Constitution. Antifa's goal is to bring down the Trump administration by causing the type of violent political anarchy the Antifa movement believes will lead to creation of a communist or socialist utopia right here in the United States of America. The logic of the hard left demands that Trump be seen as a Nazi on the right, a nationalist who secretly wishes to impose a white supremacist totalitarian government on the United States. This logic ignores the fact that Trump is a center-right politician. As noted earlier, Adolf Hitler in 1930s Germany rose from a National Socialist Party, as made clear by the formal name of the Nazi Party in German, the Nationalsozialistische Deutsche Arbeiterpartei, NSDAP. A name that stresses the Nazis were both a nationalist German first movement and socialists believing in a state-controlled welfare state. Political correctness champions Antifa. On August 13, 2017, when, at a press conference in Bridgewater, New Jersey, President Trump condemned the egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence from many sides. He was immediately excoriated by the mainstream media for condemning Antifa in terms that were morally equivalent to his condemnation of neo-Nazi white supremacist groups. Those on the radical left, for instance, have argued that Robert Spencer's white pride legitimizes characterizing Spencer as a neo-Nazi, a KKK member, and a white supremacist, all associations Spencer denies, as well as justifying violence against him. This explains an incident where Spencer was sucker-punched in his face while he was giving an interview to a journalist on the streets of Washington, D.C. during the inauguration festivities. The mainstream media has jumped on the politically correct bandwagon, proclaiming the alt-right, a new term the hard left has grabbed to condemn conservatives and libertarians as white supremacist racists, is an extreme view that must be countered by extreme measures, including Antifa violence, designed to prevent any person or group the hard left tags as alt-right from exercising traditional First Amendment free speech rights. In November 2016, the Associated Press issued new guidelines that require reference to groups designated alt-right as racist, with a requirement that whenever alt-right is used in a story, writers must include the definition, an offshoot of conservatism mixing racism, white nationalism, and populism, or more simply, a white nationalist movement. In an article published on the Associated Press blog, Don Genishevsky, vice president for standards for the Associated Press, described the alt-right as follows. The alt-right, or alternative right, is a name currently embraced by some white supremacists and white nationalists to refer to themselves and their ideology, which emphasizes preserving and protecting the white race in the United States, in addition to or over other traditional conservative positions, such as limited government, low taxes, and strict law and order. The movement has been described as a mix of racism, white nationalism, and populism. Although many adherents backed President-elect Donald Trump in the recent election, Trump last week said he disavows and condemns the alt-right. The movement criticizes multiculturalism and more rights for non-whites, women, Jews, Muslims, gays, immigrants, and other minorities. Its members reject the American democratic ideal that all should have equality under the law, regardless of creed, gender, ethnic origin, or race. The Associated Press has issued no guidelines requiring that the Antifa movement be designated as a terrorist organization on the extreme political left that espouses the use of violence. Instead, Danishevsky has issued much more sympathetic guidelines for writers wanting to report on the Antifa movement. Finally, a term has emerged in the news recently, an umbrella description for the far left-leaning militant groups that resist neo-Nazis and white supremacists at demonstrations and other events. The movement calls itself Antifa, a contraction for anti-fascists, and emulates historic anti-fascist actors in Europe going back to the 1930s. Prolonged silence about the left's violence is dangerous, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich wrote in a Fox News editorial, published August 31, 2017. It is time for the national media to reflect and start condemning left-wing attacks just as vehemently as it does the brutality of neo-Nazis, the KKK, and other hateful groups. Gingrich's point was simple but important. If the United States is to have any chance of preserving First Amendment free speech rights, amid the violent resistance the political left has decided to exercise to obstruct the Trump administration from governing. Violence in all forms is wrong and must be harshly rebuked by all Americans, Gingrich concluded. Part 3. How Trump Wins. Chapter 11. How Trump Can Win the Propaganda War. Those who are capable of tyranny are capable of perjury to sustain it. Lysander Spooner. The central premise of this audiobook is that President Trump is the target of a coup d'etat being undertaken by the deep state, including the CIA, NSA, and other intelligence agencies that maintain a commitment to a globalist New World Order. The deep state operates secretly in cooperation with the Federal Reserve, the comptroller of the currency, as well as federal law enforcement agencies, including the FBI and the DOJ, to allow the deep state to pursue clandestine operations, including illicit drug dealing and supplying weapons to terrorist groups that further the New World Order goals of the international globalist elite. This global elite currently controls a number of important international organizations, including the United Nations, the International Monetary Fund, and the European Union. The deep state maintains its secrecy through the willing cooperation of a corporate-owned and government-controlled mainstream. The devastating loss of Hillary Clinton in the presidential election of 2016 set the deep state into a panic. As a result, its agents formed and began to implement a plan they hoped would remove Donald Trump from the presidency. Deep state propaganda. To achieve this goal, the deep state and the mainstream media are employing classic techniques of propaganda and disinformation that were first utilized by Nazi Germany in the 1930s and advanced and perfected by the Soviet Union during the Cold War. The first principle of all propaganda and disinformation involves the manipulation of public opinion by the creation of a lie, known in today's terminology as a narrative or a meme, that is crafted to be sufficiently credible so that a persistent campaign of repeating the lie can change public opinion, even if the narrative is totally untrue, concocted without any basis in fact, evidence, or reality. As noted earlier, in 1928, Edward L. Bernays, widely considered the father of public relations, wrote a book titled Propaganda, The Making of the Public Mind, that greatly influenced the thinking of Joseph Goebbels, the minister of propaganda for Nazi Germany from 1933 to 1945. When approached by Goebbels to advise Nazi Germany, Bernays refused, concerned about how his book would be used. But Bernays' refusal did not deter the Nazis. Using Bernays' book for evil, Goebbels crafted a meme drawing from the science of eugenics emerging in the 1930s to vilify Jews, resulting in the horror of the Holocaust, in which an estimated 6 million Jews were brutally murdered. In 1966, the Soviet Union-backed philosopher Bertrand Russell, in holding an international tribunal on Vietnam War crimes that advanced the argument ultimately picked up by John Kerry and the group Vietnam Veterans Against the War. In January and February 1971, Kerry held a Winter Soldiers investigation based on the Bertrand Russell model. This culminated in Kerry's testimony to the Fulbright Committee on April 22, 1971, in which he defamed the U.S. military fighting in Vietnam by telling the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that American soldiers in Vietnam had raped, cut off ears, cut off heads, taped wires from portable telephones to human genitals and turned up the power, cut off limbs, blown up bodies, randomly shot at civilians, razed villages, in a fashion reminiscent of Genghis Khan. Jan Mihai Pacepa, a former three-star general in the secret police of communist Romania, one of the highest-ranking Soviet bloc intelligence agents to defect to the United States, recognized Kerry's claims as deriving from a Russian KGB disinformation campaign. In his 2013 book, Disinformation, Pacepa argued that KGB Disinformatia launched the political career of Senator John Kerry, the 2004 Democratic Party presidential candidate. Although Senator Kerry never fully revealed the source of those outrageous accusations that Kerry made to the Fulbright Committee, I recognize them as being the product of another KGB disinformation operation, Pacepa wrote. In the 1960s and 70s, when I was a leader of the Soviet bloc intelligence community, the KGB spread those same vitriolic accusations, almost word for word, throughout American and European leftist movements. They were part of a KGB disinformation operation aimed at discouraging the United States from protecting the world against communist expansion. Russian collusion, a deep state propaganda narrative. The current disinformation meme being advanced by the deep state and mainstream media is the Russian collusion, which maintains that Donald Trump colluded with the Russians to hack emails from the Democratic National Party as a tactic employed to defeat Hillary Clinton. The argument initially advanced by Hillary Clinton during the 2016 presidential campaign was that the collusion involved Donald Trump somehow working with the Russians to hack internal emails from the DNC and from John Podesta that contained damaging admissions. As the meme advanced, the Democrats and the mainstream media began accepting almost any connection that could be established between the Trump campaign and a Russian as proof that Trump had colluded with the Russians, including just the suggestion that Trump might want to meet with someone who could connect the campaign to Russian opposition research that might damage the Clinton campaign. In the world of disinformation, it does not matter that Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat, California, said publicly on May 4th that the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence had seen no evidence of collusion between Donald Trump's campaign aides and Russian officials, or that the former director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, told a Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on May 8th that he still had not seen any evidence of any kind of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian foreign nationals. As has been stressed repeatedly throughout this audiobook, no public official in the U.S. intelligence apparatus or Congress has produced any credible evidence that the Trump campaign ever colluded with Russia in a meaningful way that could possibly have caused Hillary Clinton to lose the presidential election. The argument remains that Hillary was a terrible candidate, campaigning on themes of leftist identity politics that did not resonate sufficiently with the electorate. When Special Counselor Mueller indicted former Trump campaign chair Paul Manafort and former Trump campaign official Rick Gates on October 27, 2017, the charges involved failing to register as foreign agents under the Foreign Agents Registration Unit, a charge that had nothing to do with the Russian collusion propaganda meme. Mueller further charged Manafort with laundering money into the United States through offshore banks from work Manafort and Gates did for Ukraine in a contract that ended in 2014, 2 years before Trump officially declared his candidacy for president. Again, these allegations might be relevant to tax evasion charges, but they had nothing to do with Hillary losing the election. Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz has repeatedly explained that even if it could be proved, there is no law on the books that would make colluding with the Russians a crime. This is the first sign we are dealing with disinformation. Namely, there is no evidence for the claim. In fact, the claim cannot even be specified other than to suggest that somehow Trump stole emails from the DNC and John Podesta that, once purloined, were delivered to Julian Assange at WikiLeaks for public dissemination. However, Assange has repeatedly denied that Donald Trump or Russia were his sources. Again, the damage caused by the WikiLeaks publications came not from the fact that the emails were stolen, but from the detrimental exchanges Podesta and other campaign officials had in emails they foolishly imagined would forever remain secret. Even when evidence proving the meme false is produced, the skilled deep state propagandist can keep the meme going by qualifying the claim ever so slightly as to leave open the possibility that it could yet be proven true if only the public could get access to the real information. Representative Adam Schiff, Democrat, California, the ranking member of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, first began countering the no evidence fact with an assertion that there is circumstantial evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, a statement he made on NBC's Meet the Press for the first time on March 17, 2017. In his next move, Schiff pressured the House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes, Republican, California, to temporarily remove himself from the Russian collusion investigation after the House Ethics Committee decided to investigate whether Nunes may have made unauthorized disclosures of classified information following his controversial visit to the White House to review reports suggesting that the Obama administration had Trump campaign officials under electronic surveillance. The deep state knows The Russian collusion accusations against Trump lacks proof. But still, the mainstream media simply refuses to print evidence that it was Hillary Clinton and John Podesta who were being paid by Russia, or that Democratic National Committee computer expert Seth Rich was the one who most likely stole the DNC emails from the inside, leaking copies to Julian Assange at WikiLeaks. This leads us to formulate two propaganda rules. Propaganda Rule 1. Any facts that disprove the disinformation meme false are rejected as not definitive because the investigation is continuing and proof might yet be found. As a corollary, those who doubt the propaganda meme are chastised as conspiracy theorists, a label designed to disparage anyone bold enough to have perceived the truth. It is essential to understand that a well-crafted disinformation meme like the Russian collusion narrative is impossible to dislodge by facts that prove the narrative baseless, completely without evidence or untrue. Propaganda Rule 2. Anyone attempting to disprove the truth of the disinformation meme is targeted for ridicule as part of the conspiracy theory. As a corollary, a propaganda meme advanced in politics will be more successful if it is launched by the Democratic Party, because the Democrats control the partisan mainstream media and can expect the media to advance their narrative aggressively. All this leads to the conclusion that those attempting to defend President Trump will not advance the cause by refuting Democratic Party and mainstream media claims that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia, even though Special Counselor Mueller cannot produce an indictment and the intelligence community remains incapable of producing any evidence that Donald Trump or anyone involved with his campaign colluded with Russia. So how does Trump win the propaganda war? In designing a counter-propaganda strategy, it is important to realize that the President of the United States is endowed by the Constitution with formidable powers. This leads us to the following two counter-propaganda rules. Counter-propaganda Rule 1. A propaganda campaign can only be defeated by the passage of time, as the public will lose interest in the disinformation narrative if no criminal convictions can be achieved by a special prosecutor's efforts after the expenditure of enormous government resources in the attempt to do so. If Special Counselor Mueller fails to produce an indictment specifically charging someone in the Trump campaign with Russian collusion, he will begin to justify Trump's charge that his investigation is a witch hunt. With his first indictment against Manafort and Gates, Mueller could produce only money laundering charges, plus a technical violation that Manafort and Gates had not properly registered with the federal government as agents of a foreign government. That Mueller's indictment against Manafort and Gates did not even include charges of tax evasion strongly suggests Mueller is already losing the propaganda battle. In his second indictment, announced the same day as the Manafort-Gates indictment, Mueller indicted a minor player in the Trump campaign, George Papadopoulos, not for colluding with Russia, but for lying to the FBI. When it turned out that the Trump campaign did not act on Papadopoulos' recommendation to meet with Russian officials to get opposition research on Hillary Clinton, the effort to make the Papadopoulos indictment a bombshell against Trump fell flat. If Mueller continues to investigate and indict Trump campaign officials for activities that preceded the 2016 presidential election, as he did in the Manafort-Gates indictment, pressure will build on Congress to call on the Justice Department to terminate Mueller's authority as special counselor. Counterpropaganda Rule 2. Realizing that the presidency is endowed with enormous powers, a president must take action to change the subject by action aimed at addressing a legitimate national security crisis. It is a proven fact of U.S. history since the end of World War II that presidential action in a legitimate national security emergency will take all the air out of a well-crafted disinformation meme, forcing deep state actors and the mainstream media to devote their attention to the crisis the president has decided to address. The one caution here is that the national emergency must be legitimate and serious. Simply launching a few cruise missiles at a supposed terrorist camp in the middle of a Middle Eastern desert runs the risk of being classified as a wag-the-dog diversion. This was proven by President Clinton's failure to change the subject by bombing terrorists in Afghanistan and Sudan in 1998, 3 days after he was forced to admit to having an inappropriate sexual relationship with Monica Lewinsky. The point of this rule is to take control of the news cycle, forcing the deep state and mainstream media co-conspirators to abandon their Russian collusion meme to cover a foreign policy agenda that comports with President Trump's public policy objective of keeping America safe from foreign threats. Fortified Trump's legal defense. In the background, the Trump administration must lawyer up, seeking the advice of top private law firms. Trump must make sure charges brought forward by Democrats in Congress to advance impeachment efforts are countered in congressional hearings by lawyers skillful enough to expose to the American public how and why Hillary Clinton and her supporters advanced the Russian collusion meme without evidence, simply to excuse her inadequacies as a presidential candidate. Countering the deep state and the mainstream media by fighting a street-by-street battle in congressional hearings is a type of hand-to-hand combat that delays the advancement of the Russian collusion meme. This tactic has a better chance of successfully combating the deep state's propaganda attack than trying to make the meme go away by arguing alternative facts as an overall theory of political reality. Use the powers of the presidency to the fullest. Counterpropaganda Rules 1 and 2 involve designing a plan of action that takes control of the news cycle, forcing the deep state and mainstream media co-conspirators to abandon their Russian collusion meme to cover news that President Trump once covered. A foreign policy agenda that comports with President Trump's public policy objective of keeping America safe from foreign threats need not be confined to North Korea and Iran. Should the Trump administration begin serious peace discussions in the Middle East between Israel and Palestine, a new power structure might be created in the Middle East. Conceivably, President Trump could leverage the willingness of the United States to abandon military action in Afghanistan in exchange for Russia agreeing to contain Iran. In 1986, when President Reagan met with Mikhail Gorbachev, leader of the Soviet Union, in Reykjavik, Iceland, a project known as Star Wars, America's Strategic Defensive Initiative, SDI, dominated the news cycle. With the mainstream media forced to cover the summit and Reagan's subsequent failure to come to an agreement with Gorbachev. Only the president is capable of bold foreign policy action, and President Trump needs to learn how to play this card to his advantage, silencing memes backed by no evidence that are aimed at destroying his presidency. On the domestic side, President Trump can continue stimulating the economy by relaxing and/or eliminating Obama administrative regulatory decisions. On March 13, 2017, Trump signed an executive order mandating a comprehensive plan for reorganizing the executive branch. On his own authority as chief executive, President Trump could require various cabinet members to announce plans for making dramatic reductions in force, RIFs, downsizing agencies unpopular to Trump's base, like the EPA or the Department of Education, to shadows of their former selves. Understanding the power of the bureaucracy to achieve deep state goals by setting rules and regulations that required neither congressional legislation nor Supreme Court approval, President Obama aimed to set a record for the size of the federal workforce, leaving office with more than 1.7 million people collecting government salaries in civilian agencies in 2017. As a measure of the Obama administration's enthusiasm for achieving deep state objectives through bureaucratic action, consider that the printed version of the Federal Register, the government's record of all rules and regulations currently in effect, topped off at an all-time record of 97,110 pages on the last federal workday of 2016. Dwarfing the previous record of 81,405 pages that Obama set in 2010 by 15,705 pages. President Trump must understand that bureaucrats are natural allies of the deep state, seeking to maintain their jobs for decades Bureaucrats devote their time and energy to legislating outside the authority granted to the executive branch by the Constitution. Writing and publishing countless rules and regulations, bureaucrats silently implement deep state dictates to expand the size of the bureaucracy so as to extend federal government control into every corner of life in the United States. The only way to eliminate deep state control over the federal bureaucracy is to massively reduce its size, firing thousands of bureaucrats through RIFs that bypass civil service regulations designed to protect bureaucrats from job termination. Whole departments can be closed or consolidated. The point is that President Trump must realize legacy employees in the bureaucracy remain loyal to the Clintons and to the Obamas. Given their ideological certainty, these bureaucrats are the foot soldiers in the hard left's war to resist and obstruct the Trump agenda. Stimulate the economy. Pushing an historic tax cut through Congress would also dominate the news cycle with reports that the American public would most likely receive enthusiastically. One tax cut this year can be followed by another massive tax cut next year. Through a combination of eliminating federal regulations and the federal bureaucracy, plus getting Congress to pass a series of tax cuts, Trump can make sure the American economy thrives. To the extent that the economy remains strong, President Trump will retain the middle America populist America First support that got him elected. The president should seriously entertain proposals to eliminate the Federal Reserve and end the federal income tax. Both are widely and correctly viewed as outside the scope and authority of the U.S. Constitution. By forcing a national debate on moving to a federal tax on consumption, Trump would both dominate the news cycle in his favor and continue to stimulate the economy. Issue executive orders. Even if signing and/or implementing Trump's various executive orders risks new controversies, President Trump will force the deep state and mainstream media to shift their focus from the Russian collusion meme to attack each new step the administration takes to act by executive order. Trump has begun by issuing executive orders that roll back legislation from the White House that Obama put in place through extensive use of his pen. By continuing to appeal to his base of anti-globalist supporters, Trump will increase his chances of withstanding the impeachment storm the hard-left Democrats and mainstream media intend to send his way. If the American people see the executive orders as increasing domestic security, reducing crime, creating new jobs, reducing government expense, or achieving any one of a host of other important domestic policy goals, the executive orders will be popular with Trump voters, even if the establishment elites on both coasts support the deep state mainstream media agenda. So Trump's decision to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord appealed to his conservative and libertarian base, who are convinced the left's global warming climate change rhetoric is nothing more than a globalist ideological agenda backed by junk science and calculated to redistribute income worldwide by introducing a new United Nations carbon tax. A decision to stay in the Paris Climate Accord would have depressed Trump's base, encouraging the deep state and mainstream media to believe that Trump was more vulnerable to impeachment than ever. Ignore mainstream media polls. Finally, to save his presidency, Trump should ignore mainstream media polls designed only to convince Trump voters that he is failing. These same polls dramatically underestimated Trump's popularity during the 2016 presidential campaign. This has continued with Trump in the White House. The goal of the mainstream media in conducting and publishing polls must be regarded as partisan, with biased sampling methodologies intentionally implemented to depress Trump's favorable numbers. The truth is, the hashtag Never Trump Resistance and Obstruction campaign has failed, with Trump's base now stronger than ever. Trump supporters now see him as the victim of an insane, hard-left Democratic Party that cannot accept that Hillary lost because she was a terrible candidate running on politically correct themes central to the socialist identity politics that Trump voters rejected. If the election were to be held a second time as 2016 wound down, Trump would most likely win again, only this time by an even larger margin of victory. Chapter 12. The counteroffensive Trump must launch. Also, there is no collusion. Donald J. Trump, October 2017. The mainstream media depends on daily attacks that advance the Russian collusion meme with disclosures that are sufficiently alarming to dominate the news cycle for at least 24 hours. It does not matter to the mainstream media that these daily attacks on Trump are not true or, if true, petty, of the type the mainstream media would never have made against Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. All that matters is that the new disclosures advance the Russian collusion meme that the deep state is betting will culminate in Trump being impeached. Lawfare. Julian Assange of WikiLeaks fame has defined the term lawfare to mean the abuse of the law to obtain ends traditionally met through war, such as in the case of the hashtag Never Trump resistance and obstruction movement, seizing control of the government. The word lawfare accurately describes the coup d'etat the deep state is attempting to pull off, with the hard left of the Democratic Party and the mainstream media working together to remove Trump from office through indictments brought by special prosecutor Robert Mueller. The ultimate goal of Mueller's witch hunt remains to charge Trump with obstructing justice for firing FBI Director James Comey. The plot involves forcing Trump to defend himself against the criminal charges Mueller plans to bring against him in federal court, or to force a constitutional crisis if Trump demands that instead of a federal prosecution in a U.S. district court, impeachment proceedings must be brought in the House so he could be tried in the Senate. As discussed in the previous chapter, Ion Mihai Pachipa, the former three-star general in the secret police of Communist Romania, one of the highest-ranking Soviet bloc intelligence agents to defect to the United States, was a master in the art of propaganda disinformation. In his 2013 book, Disinformation, Pachipa discussed the last meeting he had with former General Secretary of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, Yuri Andropov, in the 1970s, when Andropov was a KGB chairman. As Pachipa relates the meeting, Andropov told him, "Now all we have to do is keep this machinery alive," referring to the disinformation campaign that prompted the European Marxists to take to the streets to protest America's war on terrorism. Pachipa comments that Andropov was a shrewd judge of human nature, who knew when a plan was about to succeed. He understood that in the end, the Soviets' original involvement in the propaganda campaign designed to decrypt the United States in Europe would be forgotten, and then the disinformatia machinery would take on a life of its own, Pachipa wrote. That was just the way human nature worked. There is only one way to defeat a propaganda attack, and that is to counterattack. The counterattack must focus on the agents responsible for launching the propaganda disinformation attack in the first place. Turn the tables on the Democrats. To defeat the false Russia collusion narrative, Trump must begin criminal prosecutions against Hillary Clinton and her supporters, including the Podesta brothers, John and Tony. Ultimately, Trump must seek the appointment of a special prosecutor to go after the lying hard-left Democrats conspiring to impeach him. But the criminal investigation Trump launches must include scandals such as the Uranium One affair and plots including those launched by the Democrats to profit by selling U.S. military technology to Russia under the guise of Secretary Clinton's Russian reset policy. The Clinton Foundation must face a serious international criminal investigation to avoid the permanent damage the Clintons have done worldwide to honest, charitable giving. A criminal investigation must identify and indict those in the IRS responsible for targeting conservative and libertarian organizations and allowing George Soros and myriad other leftist foundations to enjoy tax-exempt advantages while funding a radical socialist political agenda. The investigation must out deep state actors, including the NSA's massive illegal surveillance of the U.S. domestic population and the Obama administration's illegal unmasking of information gathered on political opponents from intelligence agency electronic surveillance. Trump's counterattack must expose the political corruption now at the heart of agencies, including the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the Environmental Protection Agency, which the Obama administration weaponized to go after conservative and libertarian enemies. The effort must extend to expose the FBI for systematic leaks to the press undertaken to allow the Department of Justice to prosecute political opponents in the press. Social media giants, including Facebook, Twitter, and Google, YouTube, must be investigated for employing algorithms that screen out or otherwise suppress conservative and libertarian postings. Between the Uranium One scandal and the sale of military technology to Russia that Hillary and Podesta orchestrated with Skolkovo under the reset policy, there is plenty to investigate. For evidence, a special prosecutor could begin examining the various cash payments delivered to Hillary Clinton through the Clinton Foundation and to Podesta via the Juul Shell corporations in the Netherlands. The Democrats may end up, ironically, being the victims of their own propaganda campaign. But Trump will need to appoint a special prosecutor, given that the DOJ, already thoroughly penetrated by deep state operatives, has repeatedly given the Clintons a pass on every investigation ever opened on them. The deep state roots run deep. With the CIA involved in profiting from the international drug trade, while the CIA and the Department of Treasury turn a blind eye to monitoring the massive money laundering being excused by bureaucrats who allow international bank transfers to operate illegally with impunity. The deep state has managed to control both parties, with President Trump finding that the GOP elite leadership in Washington and New York is as committed to globalist open borders as are the hard-left political activists that have seized control of the Democratic Party. Rooting the deep state corruption out of the U.S. government will not be easy. But the future of the constitutional republic we know as the United States of America depends on Donald J. Trump having the courage, determination, and grace of God to counterattack expeditiously and with a conviction to fight to the end these entrenched enemies of God, freedom, and humanity. The money laundering case that haunts the Mueller indictments. As covered more thoroughly earlier in this audiobook, the 2012 Department of Justice settlement with the international bank HSBC over hundreds of millions of dollars in criminal money laundering for drug cartels and terrorist groups identified with Iran hang like a sword of Damocles over Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller's indictment of Paul Manafort and Rick Gates. The settlement, announced in a Department of Justice press release dated December 11, 2012, involved a deferred prosecution agreement in which HSBC admitted criminal responsibility for laundering at least $881 million through the U.S. financial system, as well as an unspecified amount of money from federally sanctioned countries including Iran, Cuba, Sudan, Libya, and Burma. In exchange for the Department of Justice agreeing not to file criminal indictments against HSBC's directors, officers, or employees, HSBC agreed to pay $1.256 billion as part of the deferred prosecution agreement, plus another $665 million in civil penalties, while admitting criminal violations of the Bank Secrecy Act, BSA, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, IEEPA, and the Trading with the Enemy Act, TWEA. Recall that the director of the FBI at the time was Robert Mueller. James Comey, who later replaced Mueller in that post, was a member of the HSBC Board of Directors. The case was settled by Loretta Lynch, who then was U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of New York. The Attorney General was Eric Holder. Just to make sure the case is clear, please understand that the Obama Department of Justice allowed HSBC to pay fines to avoid facing federal criminal indictments after the bank admitted criminal responsibility for helping Mexican drug cartels and terrorist organizations with ties to countries like Iran launder hundreds of millions of dollars into the U.S. banking system from foreign sources. Contrast this to Mueller's decision to indict Manafort and Gates on criminal money laundering charges. To begin with, Manafort and Gates have maintained that the money regarding Mueller's indictment involved payment from Ukraine for consulting services rendered that involved no illegal activity. This point is critical. Unless the government can prove the money was illegally obtained, money laundering criminal statutes